Hello, and welcome to episode 3 of the T2RL Talks podcast. I'm Bert Craven, I'm President of Technology at T2RL. As I said, this is the third in a series of our T2RL Talks podcast. This is being recorded on the 20th of March, 2023. Now, aside from our usual market reporting, our primary focus this year is about the future of commercial architecture of the airline business and the transition from the traditional inventory reservations and departure control model to a new offer, order, settle and deliver paradigm. We're going to be trying to shed some light on what the business drivers and benefits of this may be, what the short and longer term economics might look like, what the technology options are, and what the various pathways and horizons of transition might be for different carriers. All of this is going to be presented in a set of reports accompanied by launch podcasts like this as part of our transformation series. That series, we hope, will serve as a nice set of stepping stones, leading you all to our T2RL Engage conference this year from 18th to the 20th of September in London, which will allow us to continue our exploration of the path to offer and order transformation in a face-to-face setting, attended by industry veterans, leading luminaries, and a smorgasbord of superlative suppliers. Now, the first report is entitled, What Will an Order Management World Look Like? And that is going to be available now. Ian Tunnicliffe is one of T2RL's founders and now our editor-in-chief. And he's been slaving away with the research team to assemble this cornucopia of wisdom and insight. And he's here today to talk through some of the key points we're trying to highlight in our first report. And speaking of industry veterans, we're also joined by Chris Bird, T2RL Principal Analyst. Chris brings with him a wealth of experience gained over many years of involvement with both technology vendors such as Sabre and airlines including KLM, Qantas, Delta, American, and Southwest. So, Ian, what will an order management world look like?
Well, Bert, that's a very good question. And one of the things we have to think about is we probably won't even know for another 10 years or so, but we're beginning to see some signs. And the main difference, the main headline difference, is that we're going to get rid of the idea that you need two or three separate documents to manage a booking for an airline flight. In today's world, we have a P&R, which holds the itinerary, holds some customer information. We have the ticket, which holds payment information and entitlement to travel information and some customer information. And we have, in many cases, an EMD, an electronic miscellaneous document, that holds information about payments for ancillary services and some customer information.
Yes.
And the idea of order, or one order as it started in life when IATA introduced it a few years ago, is that we're going to combine all those three documents into a single order that will look more familiar to people from other industries than our own, a single retail-style order, as it's been referred to.
Obviously, that sounds simpler at the outset, going from a number of different documents to a single one. Does that mean that the purposes that those original documents served are no longer relevant? I mean, what has changed to allow us to remove the function of those documents?
That's a really interesting question. And of course, if you go back through the history of the thing, tickets have been around since the first airline flew in 1914. And tickets in the current form have really been around since 1947, since the first IATA traffic conference. And they have some limitations. I think everybody's aware that the original paper tickets had four coupons to a book. And if you wanted to have a journey that involved more than four legs of flight, you had to perform unnatural acts to combine two tickets into one and all kinds of stuff like that. And of course, since we went to electronic tickets about 20 years ago, there's no really sensible reason to have that limitation of four coupons to a ticket. And so that's one of the reasons that the technology we're using nowadays enables us to remove some limitations that were inherent in what we had before. To some extent, the same goes for EMDs. There's no real need to constrain ourselves with EMDs to a whole load of arcane codes for reason for issue code and reason for issue subcode and all of those things. Nowadays, the technology is sufficiently developed and available that we can actually allow airlines to sell whatever products they want to whomever they want, whenever they want, and not be constrained by limitations of technology that's, you know, really quite old now.
So a lot of the things that you describe then sound like they were artifacts of a time when we had very disconnected processes. And so information had to be duplicated across lots of different documents that were processed at different times, presented in different places and locations, which wouldn't necessarily have guaranteed connectivity. And a lot of these artifacts represent an old process of tearing stubs and coupons off things and, you know, parts of the ticket being used in the reconciliation and the settlement and so on. And now that we can do these things in a more streamlined way, it is just time to sweep all those bits of paper or the electronic versions of them into the bin. Would that be fair?
Yeah, I think that's certainly the idea, and that's certainly the aspiration of the people in IATA and in some of the big airlines who are really pushing ahead for this now. Mm. It's important to realize, though, that we've had 50, 60, 70 years of dealing with those old processes and old documents, and a whole load of downstream processes have become dependent on them. So revenue accounting being a very obvious example, You can't run revenue accounting without ticket coupons to feed into it, whether those coupons are on paper or electronic. There's a whole load of processes in, for example, travel agencies, in mid to back office systems where they're dealing with customer relationships and invoicing customers and expense tracking and a whole bunch of other stuff that are all set up to depend on the existing artifacts that we have. So the idea that we can just sweep them all away in a very sort of clean process is a little bit over-optimistic. It will be quite a long and complex process to take away these old artifacts and replace them with a more modern, streamlined version.
Yeah, I'd like to get Chris's view, because Chris, I know you've spent a whole career doing data integration, particularly for airlines. So you must have had to follow the tentacles of these sort of ticket octopuses within the airline and between airlines. What's your view in the chances that we've got of sweeping the desk clear here?
Well, again, agreeing wholeheartedly with Ian here that it's not by any means a trivial process to do this. Mm. The tentacles that you mentioned are very long, very far-reaching, and in many cases, quite unexpected. And so we find ourselves thinking we're about to make a change that isn't particularly dangerous and discovering that there are half a dozen systems lurking out there that we know nothing about that all of a sudden are going to fail and break. So we've got to make sure that as we go down these paths that our methods of testing, our methods of developing our integrations are very, very robust indeed. And historically, when you're testing in isolation, it's quite easy. Well, relatively. Mm. But when you're testing a very large, complicated ecosystem, getting all the test cases right, getting it properly and fully tested, reducing risk during the testing process is huge.
Yeah.
And I think that's one area where we've got a lot of focus that we're going to have to be thinking about.
From my recollection of these kind of very interconnected processes, it's not just the interconnectedness, it's that they're very long running in a time sense. Things like settlement, i.e. the ticket may be issued 300 days before it's accounted for. And so actually knowing whether you've got a process right, there can be quite a long time before you encounter the error you created.
Absolutely, yes. And then, of course, as you go over accounting boundaries, which is something we forget to test for sometimes, you discover your 300 days going over a calendar year or going over an end quarter or whatever. So there's a lot of really serious functional testing that has to go on along with the technical testing just to make sure that all the connected bits actually stay connected and work. So there's quite a big effort just in doing that.
A very significant effort. So let's sort of bring ourselves back a bit then and think about this very simplified world that Ian's described with a single document containing all of the information we need. what things other than simplicity is that going to bring in terms of either benefits or challenges, do we think, primarily?
Well, one of the original benefits that was touted when One Order was first announced is in the name, it's going to be One Order. In today's world, customers can be presented with a bewildering set of references for a journey they want to make. Mm. They'll have P&R record locators, they'll have ticket numbers, possibly EMD numbers. But then if their itinerary involves more than one airline, they may have more than one record locator. And one of the big selling points of One Order when it was first announced was that the customer would only have to have access to one reference, and that one reference would enable them to go through their entire journey through booking, through traveling, checking in, getting away from the airport, all those things, just needing to know one reference. And of course, that's potentially a big benefit. It's led some people to misunderstand slightly and think that there would literally be only one order, however complex your journey and however many different entities were involved in delivering your travel, they would all somehow share one order. And of course, that's not what will happen at all. Each entity involved in the journey will have its own order and its own order system, but they will all be cross-referenced and they will all be accessible using the order reference from the original booking airline.
So what we're talking about, in fact, is a whole series of orders that are linked and synchronized in a way that to the customer feels like one order.
Exactly that.
But then if we're going to make it feel like one order, then it sort of has to behave that way too, so that when my incoming flight is late and I go over midnight, my car rental company doesn't cancel my car rental. So even though it isn't one order in the sense of a beautiful, unified itinerary manager, it is still got to be able to respond to events that happen during the duration of the passenger experience to be able to take actions on behalf of the passenger, often when the passenger doesn't have any control of the situation. It's very hard for me to call the car rental company when I'm sitting on the plane and saying, by the way, I'm going to be past midnight. Please hold on to my car for me. I'm coming.
Yes.
So that, you know, that's moving into the fulfillment side. Yeah. But if we streamline order, you've got to make sure that we're able to manage the fulfillment, even for those things which we as the airline don't actually control.
Yeah, and I think that's a very important point that Chris has touched upon there. By moving to a technology base, and in this case, the technology base we're talking about is exchange of XML files rather than the teletype and EDIFACT messages that airlines have known and loved for a long time, we get closer as airlines to the companies that are supplying services that connect with our airline flights, like car rental companies, like hotels, like transfer companies, all those people. It's not going to be plug and play by any means, but at least we'll be talking technologies that some of those other entities have a chance of recognizing. Because if you go up to them and say, we want to communicate with you using AirIMP standards or even IATA EDIFACT standards, they're going to look at you like you've grown an extra head.
Yeah.
But if you say, actually, it's an XML API, now can we talk? You have a lot more chance.
Yeah, and it does sound from the way that certainly you and Chris are describing it is that what we have, irrespective of the format of the order, actually is a huge state synchronization problem, not just synchronizing the state of the order, but the operational data and information about the passenger and their delays and so on. And I don't imagine that all of the people in this order value chain are all going to change their systems. And even if they did, they're certainly not going to do it all at once. So we seem to be relying very heavily on the adoption of a particular synchronization protocol to try and make all of this flow and work together.
Yeah, I think we are to a large extent. But I think we're also building in to the order management systems that are now starting to be specced by some very large and very smart airlines. We're building in sort of fallback positions. So in an ideal world, we synchronize with everyone who's involved in the order, everyone who's involved in the customer's journey. But we actually have to acknowledge that some of the companies we need to work with will not be capable of doing that, at least not in the short term. You know, if you're going to book a taxi transfer in Santiago de Chile from a Lufthansa flight, for example, you cannot necessarily expect the taxi company to be able to synchronize with your one order. So you've got to have fallback positions. What can you assume? What information can you get from that taxi company? And what do you just have to assume and take as read? And this is important not just for the customer's journey, although that's probably the most important thing of all, but also for things like revenue recognition. With flights, it's pretty clear when a flight is operated and the customer has been on the flight and you can now recognize the revenue. If it's a rail company on the other side of the world who maybe doesn't have any kind of electronic registration, what do you do? And of course, you have various fallback positions. And at the very sort of most basic level, you say, okay, I delivered my customer to the place where they should have got on the train. The train operated and the customer hasn't come back to me to say that he didn't get on the train. Right. Therefore, I assume he did get on the train and I'll recognize the revenue. So that's kind of one extreme to the other. You know, when you're dealing with another airline or when you're dealing with your own airline operations, you can be very controlled and have everything lined up neatly. When you're dealing with some of the ancillary service providers, maybe who are not as well equipped technologically, you have these kind of fallback positions.
Does that lead us to a kind of set of multi-layered contracts with these external suppliers? So perhaps you have the preferred taxi service in Santiago de Chile, as you were talking about. So as the offerer of capabilities, we would perhaps recommend that you work with partner X, partner Y, or partner Z in a particular region because we actually have better guarantees around service delivery and so on.
I could certainly see that. I mean, when airlines have been looking for ancillary partners in the past, the ability to integrate and provide a sort of a seamless customer service have certainly been fairly high on the list of selection criteria.
That is true. I think probably it's worth also taking a step back in the chain and think about how you create an order in the first place, because that's got some implications for your airline and non-airline partners. A big part of what's happening now is that we're moving away from offerings being put together based on static data by third parties, and I'm talking about you, GDSs, to offerings being put together using real-time information that's exchanged between the parties in the ecosystem. So orders are created from offers. So when, as a customer, you go to an airline and say, I need to take this journey and it'll involve some of your flights and it might involve some connecting services on ground transportation or whatever. In the past and today, that's quite a complex thing to do. In the future, when we get an integrated offer and order world, that will be very simple for the customer. There's an awful lot of activity going on furiously in the background between the airline and its partners to put together an offer in real time. And that offer might well be personalized and it might well have product bundles and it might be dynamically priced. And there's a whole bunch of other stuff going on in the world of offer these days. But the bottom line is, once the customer has accepted the offer, then that offer is read directly across into an order, exactly as it was transmitted in the offer. So there's no opportunity for things like issuing a ticket in the wrong booking class, just to pick an example.
Right.
None of that can happen because the order is created directly from the offer and it's exactly what the customer asked for and the airline then offered. And where we've got third parties like our famous taxi company or maybe our rail company who may not be equipped to do this real-time offer exchange, then we'll have contracts that allow the airline, almost going back to the days of free sale. So your taxi company in Santiago de Chile might say, yes, I can do you 30 taxis per day. And you can go ahead and sell those and just send me an email to say you've sold it, and that's fine.
Right.
Again, that's an extreme. We hope that in most cases we'll be in a much more controlled environment, but we do have the ability to extend the net of products that airlines can sell much more widely than we do in today's world.
But presumably in that example, I would need to send the taxi company the passenger details and a booking reference for their records and so on and so on.
Yes, you do exactly that. But to those of us who've been in the industry a long, long time, that is exactly like free sale.
Right.
That's we could do that in the 1960s.
But you made an interesting point in the middle of all of that, I think. We're definitely talking about the airline as the kind of center of travel. And one of the questions that you and I have discussed together in the past is the airline actually in the center? And if I'm looking at vacation, it's the destination that's kind of exciting as opposed to perhaps the airline itself. And so is there an evolutionary path somewhere? And we're not talking next week, next year, next month. We're probably talking, you know, several years down the road. But as we start to look at more concentrated or more, or actually possibly even more diverse itineraries where we're not sure who's in charge of the itinerary at that point, how does that hang together? Now, that may be a topic for another conversation, but it's certainly something that occupies my mind as I think, you know, forward into the industries that we support.
Yeah, I think that's right. As Chris says, we have had a conversation about this just recently, and everything he says is correct, and the future may see a more diverse set of travel sellers out there. All I would really say is that the current initiative to move to offers and orders is an initiative by IATA and its member airlines, and they are naturally going to put the airlines at the center of the process. You know, they are not going to be the proverbial turkeys voting for Christmas. But it begs the question of whether some other entity in the future might want to take the thinking and the concepts behind One Order and extend it to a different set of what we now have to call retailers. They used to be called offer responsible airlines, but the terminology has changed in the last 12 months or so, and they're now called retailers. Who's to say that a retailer has to be an airline in this context? So far it does, but the future is a big place.
Is it taking an analogy from another industry at around about the same time, 1947, when television started? Television was radio with pictures, not anymore. And so we start off with a kind of view of how it might be, and then the thing spreads out with its tentacles into entirely different places that we can't necessarily imagine at the very beginning of the journey.
There is this question about the ownership of the customer and the ownership of the order, which is something that has been sort of very important to airlines, and they see this potentially as a way of owning the customer and owning the order. But at the end of the day, airlines aren't actually operating the point of sale in all cases, but they will still have to create an order, irrespective of how the offer is made and how the order is created or who creates the order.
Yeah, I mean, you're certainly right about the wrangling over ownership of the customers, and this has been a perennial source of friction between airlines and travel agencies especially. But in all honesty, I think they've all missed the boat now. I think the only person who owns the customer now is the customer. And increasingly with things like data protection regulation and consumer protection regulation, I think the customer is going to decide who has the relationship, who gets to use the customer's data, who gets to use the customer's activities to further their own business. So I think the days of imagining that we can own the customer, I think are actually rapidly receding.
That's certainly one way of talking about the ownership of the customer. I was also thinking, though, in terms of who paid the cost of acquisition of the customer. Who paid to get the customer into the shop, and whose shop were they in when the order was placed?
Well, that's right. And it becomes a question of, you know, who pays the cost of acquisition and who gets the reward for having paid the cost of acquisition. And that's an interesting debate that I'm sure will go on for some time to come.
Yeah. Probably quite independently of developments in order.
Yeah. I think so. Yes.
That actually raises an interesting question when you start talking about who pays the cost of acquisition and so on, because this change to offer and order, even though pretty much everybody agrees it's going to be a big improvement, it's going to be expensive.
Yeah.
It is going to cost an arm and a leg and maybe the foot off the other leg as well. It's going to be a really major investment over the next, I don't know, 20 years maybe, before it's all finally done and dusted. So how do you build the business case for that investment? Is it a cost-saving business case?
Mm.
Yeah, eventually, there'll be some big cost savings because you can shut down your ticketing systems and shut down your revenue account systems and a whole bunch of other stuff.
Yeah.
But you're not going to be able to do that until you finish transition, and that could be decades away. So is it a revenue business case? Do we believe that the ability to create dynamic offers is going to offer a boost to airline revenues sufficient to justify the big investment in the move to offer and order? Or is it just a matter of faith?
Mm.
Are airlines doing it because they just believe this is the way forward?
Yeah, I don't think there's one answer, and it's going to vary from airline to airline. I think you're right that it will be very difficult to make a cost avoidance business case for this, and it will have to be made, I think, on the basis of incremental revenue. But those are notoriously heavily discounted by people in finance. And even then, there is still the question, the same as the cost avoidance, is when does the revenue come? And when does enough revenue come for the investment to sort of wash its own face?
That's right. And that's why I raised the question of, are some of the airlines who are really pushing for this, and some airlines are pushing for it. I mean, you know, look at Finnair that's, you know, announced to the world that it's shutting down all its EDIFACT connections by the end of next year, is it?
Yeah.
And moving to a totally orders-based world. Has it made a really rigorous business case for that? Or does it just have a belief that this is the way forward and it will be strategically helpful to get ahead of the game?
I think there may be an element of somebody's got to do something to disrupt the status quo. I think airlines have banged their head against all six walls for long enough. And there may be an element of maybe we just sort of throw the board in the air and let the cards fall where they may, because anything is better than another 10 or 20 years of the status quo.
Do you think that having richer products starts to allow airlines to kind of put their toes in the water a little bit? You know, if we're thinking of things like vacations, where you do actually start to see a slightly richer looking order as being a business case that is sort of parallel and off to the side and doesn't get in the way of doing real business, and yet provides us an opportunity perhaps to test out some of the thinking here.
I think that would have to be the primary source of incremental revenue, to be honest. I mean, there will be a number of theories about where incremental revenue comes from. I mean, there will be suggestions that there is just money being left on the table. There is more in the individual traveler's travel wallet than they're spending currently, and that travelers will be prepared to spend more. There will be the idea that you can take revenue and or commission from other players in the value chain. I suspect the belief is that if the airline ticket is or not the airline order is sufficiently important in the value chain, then it has a gravitational pull that will allow the airline to sell more ancillary products and third party ancillary products. But that also brings with it cost. I mean, rich orders and complicated orders tend to be brittle. They tend to be more expensive to service, either from a technology perspective or from requiring servicing in a call center. If you look at the costs of the current OTAs who do sell kind of big, complex orders, that is the kind of world that airlines would be heading into, I think.
And I wonder how many of them have really thought that through yet.
Well, I think some of them are probably already running vacation businesses alongside their existing air travel businesses, and will have had a sense of, you know, what's the difference between selling packages and versus, you know, flights or dynamically packaged products. It does carry with it some additional cost. In some cases, it will carry with it some regulatory elements as well in some areas. You know, for instance, selling packaged holidays carries with it additional obligations and regulation.
Yeah, and many airlines are incredibly reluctant to get themselves categorized as tour operators or package holiday operators for precisely those reasons, precisely the obligations and liabilities that come with that.
Yeah, I think there is a sense that something has got to give, in the sense of there are definitely opportunities out there, but we can't go after them because the systems we have don't permit us to do that. And so there may just be this view that you've got to invest ahead of the curve, that once we have the systems that enable this product innovation and product expansion, that the opportunities will come, they will present themselves, and there will be jam tomorrow, as it were.
One of the other things that IATA and others have put forward is the idea that by moving to a more mainstream form of commerce, then airlines will not be constrained to only buy their key commercial IT systems from the traditional suppliers to the airline industry.
Yep.
This is what we do at T2RL. We track the market for those systems, and we know full well that Amadeus and Sabre between them and their two low-cost subsidiaries have got something like 70% of the market.
Yep.
And a lot of people around the industry are thinking, well, wouldn't it be a good thing if some more mainstream IT suppliers could come in and give Amadeus and Sabre a run for their money?
Yeah.
I wonder, you two gentlemen are both much better versed on modern IT architectures than I am. Do you think this is realistic?
So the answer is in principle, yes. So when we talk about simplifying the business, we're not just talking about making it simpler for airlines. We're talking about making it simpler for potential new technology supplier entrants. The barriers to entry into the airline business currently are quite high. The level of investment required to go from no passenger processing system to a passenger processing system are extremely high. And the margin rewards aren't necessarily fantastic at the other end. What we have at the moment is a very undercompeted market. We have some very long-term players in the industry who have made massive investment over a very long period of time and have basically cut themselves quite a nice corner of that market, which makes entry very difficult. You know, they are not in unassailable positions, but they are in very, very strong positions. So I think from IATA's perspective and from airlines' perspective, encouraging new players to enter that market is massively important. And I think for the general competitiveness and liquidity in the market in general, it's actually important for everyone that new players see the airline market as vibrant and full of opportunity enough to actually make investments. But the airlines are going to have to work hard to bring those people in. They won't just wander in with wads of cash. They're going to have to be coaxed in. And we know historically that these types of systems operate on volume, i.e., in order to be commercially viable, they have to have many millions of passengers being processed through them in order to operate at reasonable economics. And so that means that the industry has got to lay out some pretty big bait to bring the kind of partners into the industry who are going to compete effectively.
And I think a lot of the kinds of players that might look for breadth as well as depth, if you like. So, you know, if you look at the number of airlines in the world, it's not a huge number compared with, say, retailers or other general industries. Mm. So, and the opportunity to sell to 600, 700, however many airlines there are. I haven't looked at the T2RL data this week, so I'm not sure exactly. It's no longer casting the bread on the water and being able to take 1% of the market. You've actually got to take quite a big chunk of the market in order to get enough breadth, as well as the passenger volume. Obviously, the transaction volume is huge, but getting the breadth, I think, is key too.
And I think that's the other thing about trying to make ourselves look more like other verticals. You know, if vendors coming into the market look at the airline market and go, there is no technology anywhere that I can leverage to bootstrap myself into this vertical, that means that the barrier to entry, the mountain they've got to climb, is very high. Whereas if they can say, well, look, I know that I need to be able to sell holidays and airline tickets and so on, but at least if I start with this system over here that can sell a million pairs of trainers or a million Xboxes an hour or whatever it is, then that's a good starting place. I think historically attempts to take those kinds of systems and then shoehorn tickets, EMDs, PNRs, BSMs, God knows what else into that box, have very often ended in terrible failure, that the airline industry has basically got to meet the technology industry halfway here. It's got to fight a little bit of the battle for them.
Yeah, it's not like we have a huge number of SKUs to sell in our industry.
But it's funny how the few SKUs that we do sell drive amazing complexity.
Yes, they do indeed drive a lot of complexity, and they skew the market.
Yeah.
So the way I see it, that there are two distinct sets of potential new entrants to the market. There are the vendors who've historically sold into the airline business, but in a very specialized area like revenue management or like maybe merchandising engines. And these are people like Pros, like Flyer Labs, like DataX.
Yep.
And they want to build out their systems so they can offer a full comprehensive offer and order management capability.
Yes.
And, you know, we can have a view as to how successful they're going to be. But then we can look to the wider market and maybe let our imaginations go a little bit and say, okay, so why doesn't Amazon sell air? Why doesn't Salesforce sell air?
Yes. Why don't they provide the technology that does it? I mean, as opposed to sell it. But yes, absolutely.
Indeed.
And I think that first class of vendors have some advantages. And those are, first of all, domain knowledge. They understand just how complex things are already. And to a degree, backward compatibility. They will have experience integrating their systems with the EDIFACT-based standard systems and so on. I think that domain knowledge and that technology experience gives them an advantage, but they are also therefore quite heavily invested in that world as well. The new players, people would be willing to make an investment of the size that is probably required in the order of hundreds of millions of dollars, certainly, to produce a competing offer and order management system. And I think we can, you know, we can all think about who those technology vendors might be, needs to be given an excuse to get out of bed. Because there's no question that they're capable, you know, they're technically competent enough, they're rich enough. You know, as I said earlier, this trap needs to be baited with future revenues, you know, which tells us immediately that this is going to cost somebody some money, this journey.
One of the other aspects for a new player coming into the industry is the whole question of transition.
Yes.
And we shouldn't talk too much about transition now because we're going to be doing a whole report and a whole podcast just about transition soon. Yeah. But it's worth mentioning that if we believe, as I certainly do, that the transition of the whole industry is going to take well in excess of a decade, you're going to have a period where some players in the industry are using the new stuff and some are using the old stuff, and somehow they've got to be made to talk to each other.
Yep.
And if you're coming in from outside and all you have is the new stuff, that gives you a real problem.
Yes.
And that provides an unfair advantage for the incumbent players. So one of the things the industry is going to have to think about if it really wants to encourage new players to come in is how to manage transition. And as I say, that's the subject for our next report in this series.
Yeah. I mean, transition is going to be more than 50% of the battle, and it's probably going to be a good 50% of the cost. The journey is going to be quite an expensive one, and it's going to be expensive because at least part of that journey, we're going to have to maintain, well, most of us are going to have to maintain some degree of backward compatibility with the rest of the industry.
Yep.
And as you say, that also creates a problem with entrants, which is in order to take you on the journey to the new world, I've first got to reinvent backward compatibility with the old world. And so as well as bringing the promise of future revenues and volumes, I think the airline industry, if it wants to attract these vendors, have got to have got to come up with a plan of how they're going to deliver that, which is we're going to provide you with the specifications. We're going to help you build the adapters and the backward compatibility. You know, there's going to have to be some investment from that side as well, because it's a huge amount, you know, 60 or 70 years of historical technology and cruft that will have to be sort of reinvented in order to make sure that somebody who is working in a purely order-driven world can still work with ticket-based partners.
And then along with that, of course, there is the desire, natural desire by any vendor to encourage lock-in. And yet here we are attempting to kind of make the industry a little more open, to make switching costs less. So we've got this extra tension lurking here. I can offer you the same API, perhaps, but my capability and my functionality behind the scenes has to be so much better, rather than trying to lock in by API or by data content. Yes, EDIFACT messaging has been largely standardized, but there are all sorts of little wrinkles in there where you can get away with some lock-in. So that could be another kind of dimension of this as well.
The airline industry's lock-in has always been the cost of transition. I mean, I'm not even sure the vendors would have to do it deliberately. I mean, cost of transition in our industry is high for a whole number of reasons that are just logistical. We are massively interlinked with partners, with airports, with regulatory authorities, with e-borders, you know, all of these things. And it is the level of integration that drives our cost of integration. And it is the cost of integration that locks us in, because historically, it's always been very difficult to make business cases that cover the cost of transition. They may well cover in the sense that the benefit of moving to a new system that has better features and might deliver better revenue, that's fine. But enough revenue to cover the cost of transition has always been the challenge.
And that's probably a good place to kind of summarize the move. I think, you know, to put things in a nutshell, we at T2RL are convinced that after probably as much as a couple of decades of false starts, this transformation is real. Mm. The industry is buying into it, and it is going to happen. We're not taking any bets on how long it's going to take or who the winners are going to be on the technology provision front, but it's something that's definitely happening and something that we will continue to explore through the rest of this year and at the conference, at the Engage conference in September, to which I hope everyone listening to us now will be able to come.
Yeah, and I would add to that, I think there's a couple of things that make this particular transitional start feel different. The first is I don't think I've seen this level of consensus, as you just mentioned, Ian. I think everybody is in agreement. And they're even in broad agreement about the direction of travel, the speed, who bears the cost, various other things. Yes, these are always going to be up for debate, but there is a very broad consensus about benefits and about direction of travel, and that now the change is upon us and we have to knuckle down and deliver it. I think the second thing is the level of determination that this will not be another incremental change. We are not going to put another layer of skin on the onion here. We're not going to put some more stuff over the top of the old stuff. All of the design work that we've done with carriers, all of the conversations that we've had with vendors have been about making sure that none of the legacy cruft pollutes the purity of the new order-based world. Very, very clear lines are being drawn. Backward compatibility is absolutely understood, but we're not bringing any of our baggage with us. And I think that determination that this is not going to be just another incremental change is another thing that marks this out as quite a different departure. Any final words from you, Chris?
No, I think not much extra to add. I think the summary from you guys is spot on. The journey is going to be rough, and we'll talk about the transition in one of the next podcasts. Choosing which bits of the journey to start on, I think, is critical for each airline in its own space. You know, like everything else, getting started is often the hardest bit.
Yes.
Getting the first word on that clean sheet of paper is harder very often than writing the whole article.
Indeed.
And I think we're now at the stage of deciding what that first word on that clean sheet of paper looks like.
Very good. Well, thank you both for joining us on this episode of T2RL Talks. As we've mentioned, please keep an eye out for our new report coming out now, What Will an Order-Based World Look Like? Please bear in mind that registration is now open for our conference in September, T2RL Engage 2023. Please come to t2rl.com and look for the events page there if you'd like to register for that. And we hope to see you on our next episode and ultimately at the conference in September. Thank you all very much.
Thanks, both, Neil.
Thank you.